Your drive home starts now with Carrie Bickmore and Tommy Little.
Followed by Hamish and Andy.
This
is Carrie and Tommy.
Sure is. Welcome to Hump Day, Carrie Bickmore.
Oh, it's Wednesday already.
I know. Hello to you as well, Tommy Little.
Buzz, you're gorgeous, man. How are you?
Very well.
How's Darwin, Tommy?
It is hot and beautiful and the people are amazing and I'm trying to organise this nice little relaxing event for tomorrow morning. See if you can get a
what,
hint.
What, for you or me? Because that sounds like something I'd like to do.
Well, I don't know. It's this experience they have for tourists here and they assure me it's just safe. It's a bit of fun. It is called the Cage of Death.
Oh, you're going to go swimming with the crocs.
That's the plan.
Oh, have you ever swum with the crocs?
No, I've never swum with the crocs. Last time I nearly encountered a croc, I was up in Cape Tribulation and I was with my girlfriend at the time and I suggested we go for a swim in the beach and there were all these croc signs. But I said to her, I said, don't worry, we'll go into the water backwards so we can see the crocs coming from the shore. And she goes, are you sure?
You're
and I said,
an idiot.
Yes. I had no idea. I got to the pub and the guy said the same thing. He goes, mate, the crocs. And I said, don't worry, I backed into the water so I could see the crocs coming into the water. And he goes, the crocs are in the water. I was like, oh, I did not know that.
You laughed at that young guy that said that locals don't get eaten by crocs and jumped in to impress the tourists. You know the haters going to hate guy. You laughed at him. Yeah, you thought going in backwards because it was going to mean you didn't get eaten by a croc.
So I wouldn't be surprised if tomorrow in the Cage of Death I somehow managed to find myself outside of the cage going, no, it's fine. I'll just back into them. It's good. Yeah, it's okay. Don't worry, guys. It's okay.
We got a big show ahead. But up next, we're going to talk about what you wanted to be when you grew up and what you were now doing. One of us wanted to be a ballerina. I don't know which one that would have been. And the other one wanted to be an NBA star. Ooh, I can't guess.
I still can't pirouette, to be honest.
We're going to be chatting about that next.
Carrie Bickmore and Tommy Little.
If you've got the flu, we want to be chatting to you next.
Oh, is that what we're doing? Just a call out for sick people?
Just get people to like, on air. This is a sexy show.
Hey, Bickers, I saw your fine self on the project last night, and I wanted to investigate further about something that you mentioned. For people who didn't see it, this is what you said.
I wanted to be a dancer until we had a careers advisor come in year 10, and she said, you'll never make a career out of dancing. Don't do that. She'd never seen me dance, and she was 100% right. I'm really glad.
We were talking about the fact that apparently this research has come out. This study's been done on a whole lot of young kids, like teenagers, about what they want to be when they grow up. And they found that teenagers these days have way too unrealistic career expectations. They all want to be like sports stars, YouTubers, actors, you know, TV hosts. I mean, why would you want to be that? All those sorts of things like that. And they're saying it's unrealistic that you got to dream for things that you might actually get to do one day. So we were talking about things we wanted to be when we grew up. And I was saying that I used to want to be a dancer. And I did. I studied dancing for like 15 years. And I never would have been successful in it. And that careers advisor who said to me, you probably aren't going to make a career out of that, hadn't seen me dance. But she was right because I loved doing it, but I would never have been successful at it.
Like, yeah, but
you
I've
see
got
me
a,
on a dance floor at a wedding, you know, and I've got some moves, but they're limited.
Oh, mate, you tart drop like nobody else.
Yeah, but you need more than a tart drop to make it as a successful ballerina. How many ballerinas have you seen tart drop?
Well, I've seen one at every wedding that you attend. I've got massive issue with these dream killers. I reckon it's so... Are they essentially saying you should dream low, like you should shoot for the middle? Is that what they're saying?
No, I think they're saying dream big but have a fallback plan. Don't just think, that's all I'm going to be, a YouTuber, and then when you don't become a YouTuber, you're like, oh, now what do? I've got no other skills.
Nah, sod that off. Dream and dream big. I thought the very notion of a dream is it's meant to be unrealistic. I thought a realistic dream was real life. Do you know what I mean? Like, and I reckon you dreaming about being...
It's just blowing my mind.
Well, I would have thought the very point of a dream is that it is unreal. Like, you know, you can fly in dreams. You can do all these things that you can't do in real life. And that's what makes them special and exciting.
Yeah,
and that's what expands...
Real life. You got to pay.
Yeah, but it's still important to expand. Wow, I'd never thought I'd be saying these words. But I think it's still important when you're growing up to expand your mind as much as possible and to have these fanciful thoughts without someone going, no, you're just going to stock shelves and that's all you're going to do. You've got the rest of your life to be boring like that. You may as well at least think, like, I reckon you dreaming of being a ballerina, right? Even though you don't end up doing that, I would argue that it was those big dreams and that aspirational goal that you had that you then carry over to other parts of your life and mean that you're very successful like you are now.
I reckon you, Dr. Phil, you have just gone. I didn't realise this was your hitting zone.
Well, I got to Darwin, the sun's out and I'm feeling good.
What did you want to be when you grew up?
I wanted to be an NBA basketballer.
And how close did you get to that dream?
I mean, not close. As close as I got to dunking, which was also not close.
So when did you decide that wasn't for you and that you'd, and then your fallback plan would be a comedian?
There was a moment, I reckon, when I was kind of 14 or 15 where all the games started to be Friday nights and training started to be Sunday mornings. And I realised that,
partying
and chasing women was more exciting. But again, I think if somebody had said to you at, whenever with that council before then, Carrie, you're never going to be a ballerina, maybe that would have snuffed out the flame, which then led to your other successes.
But I think there's also an assumption that if you're doing a really full-on job like being an NBA star or a footballer, that you're also happy. Like so
Great
many
point.
High-profile people aren't happy. Maybe you're better off doing, not being ridiculous and going for the biggest job in the world, but going for something that you'll just enjoy doing so you can live a happy life. You might not be the most successful at it, but you'll have a bloody good time doing it.
You know who I always think of? I always think of Olympians who never medal or never make a final. So say sprinters, right, who maybe qualify in one heat, but then they never make a final or anything.
They've dedicated their life to it.
Their whole life, right? And then they walk away from it and they're like, one of the worst jobs I've had, or many people would think is the worst job, was the happiest I've been when I was like 19, shoveling snow. Shoveling snow up at a ski resort. I made no money.
But at night you would have had the time of your life.
Yeah. I lived in dorms and I spent all day just shoveling and it was heaven.
Yeah, I remember working at a surf shop and it was the best. I reckon it was almost, other than this job, of course, the best job I've ever had in my entire life. I got to sell bathers to people and I just loved it. I could never afford...
I got to sell bathers to people.
I really liked it. I'd sit in there and I was really honest with people. So they'd say, does this look good? And I'd say no. And then we'd try to find them bathers that looked good on them. And then we'd find a pair and they'd walk out so happy. And I was like, yes, this is what I'm made for. I loved it.
This is my calling. Oh, good. So you did give them other options. You didn't just say no and then let them walk off.
No, but I hated going into shops where people would say something looked good when I knew I'd stand in front of the mirror and I'd know that I looked so bad and the shop assistant would go, oh my gosh, that's amazing. And I'd be like, you're lying to me. So I took the other philosophy and I made so many sales. I was like their best salesperson. Honestly, I could sell ice to the Eskimos. I was next level.
See, this fits in with my theory that sometimes crappy jobs are the best jobs.
Well, let's ask other people. Are you happy in your crappy job?
Yeah, great.
You might have wanted to be a footballer, but who cares? Now you're doing what you're doing and you're loving it.
Yeah, give us a call. 131060. Are you happy in your crappy job? We'll take your calls.
Carrie Bickmore and Tommy Little.
131060, that's our number right now, chatting about are you happy in your crappy job?
Because teenagers have been told that their expectations for their careers are too unrealistic. They're not going to be NBA stars. They're not going to be YouTubers. And that's just the facts of life. But we're saying maybe you could be perfectly happy doing something that's not considered the best job in the world. And we've got Heidi on the line from Melbourne. Heidi, are you happy in your crappy job?
Look, I don't do it anymore. But when I was studying, I used to drive a Thomas the Tank Engine train and I loved it. It's the best job ever.
Oh, my son would love that as his actual job now. Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
So where were you working, like at Fates or something or shopping centres? Or
it was like around a shopping centre. I studied in Geelong, so around just like local shopping centres, and I swear I had more fun than the kids did.
Was it? I don't feel like this is even a paid job. I feel like people would volunteer to do this. Were you getting paid?
$30 an hour.
What? Yeah, oh, it's amazing.
I'm going to quit this job. Is it still available?
I'm getting the same wage now as a nurse, so I may as well have
Well, that doesn't that tell you something, Heidi? How ridiculous. Mm. That's a whole nother phone topic. Why don't nurses get paid more? But we'll do that another day. We've got Paris now on the line from the Gold Coast. Paris, are you happy in your crappy job?
My current job is really good. I'm a flight attendant now, but I really miss working at Macca's when I was a teenager.
Oh,
it's the simple times, wasn't it?
That was the best job ever.
Did you get a free meal and then 50% off for your friends? Is that right?
Oh yeah, of course.
Is that the deal?
I mean,
that would have made uni easy if you got to eat there for free.
It might have changed a bit, but I remember Macca's always look after their staff, like give them, you know, a meal, a thing, and then it always was great. I was jealous of my friends who were working at Macca's. I was like, oh, how'd you get that?
We got Craig in Melbourne. Craig, are you happy in your crappy job, mate?
Craig's here. Craig, you happy?
Craig, he's crying in the car. I'm not happy. What do you do, Craig?
Craig or Jake?
Mate, we'll take whatever. What's your name?
Yeah, it's Jake. Sorry.
No worries.
Pizza delivery driver.
Oh.
I love it.
Hey, Jace, I've got to ask you the question, and I apologise because I'm sure everybody asks you it, but have you ever had, you know, the typical pizza delivery guy scenario play out?
No.
What's that? Do you mean knock on the door and get invited in? Is that what we
Yeah, and the
about?
Sexy music kicks in and bow chicka.
No touch like that, Tommy.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, finally we've got is this the real Jason Ackermanis, the footballer? Is that you calling through?
Oh.
G'day, Tommy.
Hello.
Acker, you great man.
Oh, look, I've been listening to you today. And I just thought I'd mention, the poor guys are probably playing percentages, you know. There's only like 1.7% chance, you know, you can be an Aussie Rules professional player. But I thought I'd tell you that my dream job was to be an F1 driver. And so crap was my dream. I ended up being an AFL Hall of Famer. So, you know, it just shows you can't always get what you want.
Mate, the talk topic was, are you happy in your crappy job? That's not a crappy job, Acker.
Well, that was my job. My crappy job now is stay-at-home dad. So I love my job as a stay-at-home dad. My wife has gone out and worked. I've worked for 16 years now. I very much enjoyed my crappy job. I could probably do without the number of times I have to actually do the washing, cleaning, dishwasher, but I'm pretty happy.
So you know, you didn't meet the expectations of being an F1 driver, and instead you're just the taxi for your children.
Oh, let me tell you. I mean, don't get me wrong. There's nothing worse than being a poor dad who's always out working. The hugs they give you, well, you get paid crap. In fact, you get paid nothing. It is worth every hug because it's the only thing you do it for. Because without that, you put up with the tantrums and all the skid marks for what? Just the hugs. That's all I want. That's all I want.
I love that you've gone from the skid marks of an F1 driver to just the actual skid marks.
Carrie Bickmore and Tommy Little.
Hi, I'm Dr. Nikki, sexologist and relationship expert. As a sexologist, I get asked a lot of questions.
When you look at the internet, what images do you look at?
Are we doing it right? Am I normal?
Figuring out whether I want other people in my life to know about this.
There's a lack of permission and education out there.
It depends on the connection you have with people.
Where there's so much information that's needed that here's a platform where I can say all the things that I can't say on air.
So I have one leg that's suspended off the ground.
So this is why I've started Sex and Life. Download me, Dr. Nikki with Sex and Life, podcast1.com.au and the Podcast One app.
Carrie Bickmore and Tommy Little.
131060 right now. We are looking for people who have the flu. So if you've got the flu right now, give us a call. 131060.
Like if you're really snotty and coughy and you're just sick of it, we want like really over it flu people.
And Bickers, is this the plan that you were saying to me off air? Because you've started to feel better, you want to get these people to come into the studio and make out with you so you can get some time off work? Is that what's going on?
No, because I want to talk to people because apparently we're in the group of the worst flu outbreak on record. Apparently 70,000 cases of the flu have been reported so far this year, and they're saying the worst might even be yet to come, right? And the reason I wanted to talk about it is because I want to talk about the flu shot, right? I reckon people are in two camps about the flu shot. I'm a flu shot girl. I get the flu shot every year. But every time I talk to people about the flu shot, What?
I'm a flu shot girl. It's
well,
just
I am.
I just picture if you ever end up single, don't use that as your Tinder profile line. Look, I'm a flu shot girl.
I like long walks along the beach and getting the jab. Yeah. No. I feel like...
Well, that sounds better than a flu shot girl, but anyway.
I feel like people are in two camps and you always hear the same arguments, you know, which is, oh, I don't get the flu shot because every time I've had the flu shot, I've gotten the flu, which you hear all the time. And yeah. I never know what to say to that when people say, well, you're a flu shot girl. Tell me, do I get the flu when I get the flu shot? And you also hear people say, I don't need it. Like, I'm not old. I'm not pregnant. I don't need it.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I should admit something to you. I had been getting the flu shot for the last few years because I'm asthmatic. And so the doctor always recommends it to me and you get it for free. And then last year, and I never thought I would be this person, but last year I feel like it made me sick. And so this year I'm like, nah, bruh.
Well, you know what? I want to dispel some myths. And I've got Dr. Bridie O'Donnell on the line. Now, Bridie is an incredible GP who we have on the project often. Bridie, have you seen an increase in cases of the flu in your practice?
Well, in fact, there has been a huge increase. And the timing is often the tricky part as well, because the immunisation from the vaccine often only lasts 3 to 4 months. And if people are a bit keen, flu shot girls and the like, they're coming in early and getting it in March. And then it's all run out by July. And then they do get sick and they think, what? So that can happen for sure.
All right.
Bridie, so, I always hear, oh, sorry.
I was going to ask your question.
Well, I always hear myths of it mutating as well. And I say myths because that's
like
completely
Wolverine
the wrong
style.
Word to use. Yeah. So is it possible that if I got the flu shot early as well, that in 2 months' time, I'm not even protected against this new mutated strain that's going around?
It is true that the super-duper scientists that make the flu vax, the quadrivalent flu vax, are sort of chasing their tail in a way. They're looking at the most common strains from the previous year, developing this new vaccine to protect against those four strains. But, of course, we don't know what new strains there are. And then, of course, because so many people aren't getting the flu vax, you're being exposed to other people who are unwell or other super-duper asthmatics like you, Tommy, who say, I don't need it, man. It's not for me. So many people feel like they're not in that risk group. And look, we're all guilty of this, where when we feel well, we're never grateful enough for how good our body works or, you know, what things we can do to look after it. And then when we get sick, we think, well, how did this happen? This is outrageous. You know, why do I have the flu now?
Well, because I was hearing someone say, Bridie, on radio this morning, that the whole thing is that we think, oh, because we're healthy, we don't need it, right? But it's the kids that we should be giving it to as well, because their little grubby hands are spreading the flu throughout our community, right? And it's our nanas and poppers and our friends' newborn babies, say, that are really at risk. And so us healthy guys in the middle and our kids and stuff should get it, so it's that whole herd immunity thing. Is that right?
It's totally right. And what's amazing is that 9 out of 10 children aren't vaccinated. And it should be for every kid over the age of 6 months. Certainly those kids who aren't well or in hospital, and there's a few other groups that might not be able to take the quadrivalent vaccine. But to have 9 out of 10 children not be getting a flu vaccine, and as you say, they're kind of walking petri dishes. And what we know too about germs is that even when people are good with coughing and sneezing into hands or tissues or hankies, they're then using those hands to touch surfaces, and those surfaces are then touched by everyone else. That's why public transport can be a bit of a nightmare. So getting your flu vax for your child, for your parents, for your pregnant friends, you know, it should be for absolutely everybody.
Bridie, I need to address the issue of it just making me sick, because I feel like, I know people say this a lot and they used to say it to me and I'd go, oh, you're crazy. You've just got something different and it's coincidentally happened at the same time. But then last year, I swear it made me sick, and so now I don't want to get it again.
So you mean as the needle went into your arm, you became febrile and started sniffling, and then you felt a terrible weakness and achiness all over your body?
That's correct. And when they took it out, it got even worse.
You're crazy. I'm sorry to tell you this on air, but it's a myth that you'll get the flu from the flu vax. There's nowhere near enough viral molecules within it to give you a flu.
But
to
then
give
what's
you like
happened?
A little cough, got anything?
Well, it's different for different people, and certainly if you're unwell when you go and get it, sometimes we can be incubating our own little virus and we go and get a flu vax, and that can change our immunity and affect things. But everyone is so different. Everyone's health and their health status and their family history and the work that they do and whether or not they're smoking and whether or not they're around other people who are unwell. So that's why it is so important to maintain a good relationship with your doctor. And if you're an asthmatic, Tommy, it's so important for you to make sure that your respiratory health is in good shape.
So they don't make you sick. They definitely don't make you sick.
She said no, Tommy.
Yeah, okay.
But it's not a force field. I mean, it doesn't protect you from everything, you know, shark attacks, etc.
I often think about living in a place, in a part of the world where I didn't have access to this kind of thing. And I think if I do have access to it, why would I say no to it? That's what I always think.
I think that's a great point. And for anyone, obviously people who work in the medical field are all very pro-vaccination. But what we're finding too is that we live in a generation of people who didn't grow up with friends and family who had polio or who have died of measles, you know, and when those things occur and when young babies die of whooping cough or other things that are preventable, it's shocking and devastating to our community. And yet those things were happening generations ago all the time. And we see it in the third world, people don't have access to vaccines. So it is really important not to be complacent.
And just in case you're wondering how bad the flu feels, we've got Pat on the line from Melbourne. Pat, how bad are you feeling right now?
Oh, shocking. Absolutely shocking. Excuse me. Sorry.
Carrie Bickmore and Tommy Little.
All right, Tommy, how much would you spend when you meet the love of your life? How much will you spend, do you think, on an engagement ring?
Well, the age-old rule seems to be 3 months of your salary. And so what I would be doing would be taking 2.5 months holiday and then working for 2 weeks and then spending that 2 weeks wage on a wedding ring. I think people spend way too much on them.
See, so do I. And this it's all hit the fan because this woman was proposed to by her gorgeous fiancé and she's gone online on this mum blog to complain about the size of the ring. Now, she's gone on to talk about the fact that her husband or fiancé is usually very generous, she says, but she wasn't particularly blown away by the small $2,141 ring that he had chosen.
Okay, so firstly, it's weird that there's complaining on a mum's blog site. That's weird. but next up, $2,000.
Okay, but this
That's
is her
heaps.
Point. She's gone on to explain herself. She said his salary is nearing a six-figure sum.
And she nearing. Said, it's not even.
Having seen the receipt, she said, it's a lot less than I would have imagined he would have spent on such a significant piece of jewellery. And she said, I wish that he had given me the chance to choose it with him. She said, I don't like it and I would have liked to have found something together that we both liked.
Okay.
Now, lots of things to discuss here.
Well, the first one is that this woman is an absolute mole. I can't. She said she saw the receipt. Who demands to see a receipt?
Well, she didn't say she demanded. It could have slipped out of his pocket.
No. The only reason he would hold on to the receipt is because he's so nervous about giving this demon a present that he knows he's going to have to take it back the next week because she's hated it yet again.
Well, it was funny because she said someone at work apparently told him that if she makes it all about the ring, then she's not the girl for you.
Completely.
And now he's like, oh, it's a bit late for that now because we're already giving it to her. But I wanted to talk about rings, right? Because this is the thing. It used to be 3 months' salary. I just feel like in this age where homes are so expensive, to get into the housing market, it's ridiculous. We've got less and less money and time to go on holidays and have experiences. I wonder whether it's time to move past the ring. Like, I feel like maybe there's experiences you can have with your partner. Sure, have something to signify that you're married, you know, have a ring of some description or something, you know, that costs a lot less than that, and use the money. Like, some people spend $15,000 on a piece of jewellery that you might even lose or not like in 5 years' time when your taste has changed. And then, but you could have spent that on a reno. You could have spent that on going to Greece for 3 months and having the most memorable time ever.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the tattoo the other person's name around the finger because it's cheaper, you get a sick new tat, and you can't lose it.
No, and you can't pretend to have left it off.
That's exactly right. Here is the problem with that. And I think this is why people often like expensive rings. You also can't pawn it when your wedding falls to pieces.
Yeah, you can't get something back for it. But I did ask some friends today. I was asking some girlfriends. Mm. One of them said that she couldn't care less about jewellery. She said often when friends get engaged and they show her their big bling, she's always like, nah, and she feels dead inside. She feels nothing. She's like, what a giant waste of money. But yet my other friend straight away went, no way, if my partner was in that kind of money and he got me a $2,000 ring, I'd be so pissed off. He spends like $10,000 on his bike. I was like, okay, well, you're more inclined to agree with this woman here who's getting harassed online. But I don't know. I know that jewellery is important to some women, but I reckon we can move past it. And I reckon there'd be a lot of people listening right now that did something else with the money. They did something else. They didn't spend an absolute load on their ring. And instead, they did something else to mark the occasion.
So what are you suggesting? Donate it to charity?
No, I'm saying go on a holiday. Your reno that you've been always wanting to do. Go have that extra kid that you thought you couldn't afford. I don't know. Well, that's probably going to ruin your marriage, not make it better. You know what I mean?
Let's chat about it. 131060, that's the number for Carrie and Tommy. Have you ditched the engagement ring and done something completely different with the money? We'll take your calls next.
Carrie Bickmore and Tommy Little.
131060, taking your calls right now. Have you ditched the engagement ring and done something else?
We're talking about this because a girl's gone online to slam her fiancé because he got her a $2,000 ring. She says he almost earned six figures. It's not enough and she doesn't like it. And I'm saying maybe it's time to stop worrying about the price of the ring, get something cheaper and do something amazing with the cash you could have spent on the ring.
Yeah, you're not saying save the money. You're saying spend the money, but spend it on something awesome.
Together that you can still remember for the rest of your life and have an amazing time. I've got Alicia on the line. Alicia, did you ditch the ring and do something else instead?
I didn't necessarily ditch the ring. I just didn't spend as much on the ring. My ring only cost me $1,000 from 2000. I picked it out. I was happy with it. And then we used the rest of the money to travel around Tassie and do what we do around Tassie.
Oh, and how happy is that, Major?
Oh, happy. I've been with him 13 years and just found out I'm pregnant. So I'm over the moon.
Oh, that's awesome.
Congratulations.
So, yeah, I don't think it's the price of the ring. It's the love that counts.
Oh, well, that just says it all. I think we're done yet.
What do you think of this story that we've just been talking about and how she's cracked it at this bloke? What do you think he should do? Do you reckon that's a dumpable offence?
I like what you said earlier, that if they reckon if she's got a problem with the ring, she's not for him.
Yeah.
So, I don't think she should be complaining about it. She should be happy she got one. A lot of people don't get any.
I agree, Alicia. I really like, Tommy, what you were telling me in the break. You tell everybody what you said to me in the break, what you fantasise about.
What?
Not that fantasy. Well, the one that's appropriate for on air.
We've got to narrow it down. I've told you so many. No, I was saying how I love the idea of, because I like to think when I find the woman of my dreams that she wouldn't care about a ring. So I love the idea of proposing with a really rubbish ring and then her laughing it off and then me revealing actually a really nice ring in a different box.
And if she doesn't laugh it off and she goes, what do you then do?
Well, the flip side of that is then if she cracks it, then I reveal the really nice expensive ring and I say, but you're never going to have this. See ya. And then I push a button that reveals a trapdoor and she just
she drops out. Well, we got Jacoby on the line. Jacoby, did you ditch the ring and do something else with the money instead?
I've told my partner from the get-go, we've been together for 6 years and we've just recently had a little baby girl, that I don't want a ring on my finger. I'm happy if he gets a tattoo the same as what I have. I got, after we were together for 1 year, his initial on my finger, and that's enough for me. It can go towards a house for our little one to live in.
Hey, I'm a big fan of the tattoo on the finger. Is he going to get the tattoo?
He will eventually when he's ready, and it's up to him when he wants to. He can do that, but until then, I'm perfectly happy with my life the way it is.
Yeah, there's nothing like 6 years and one kid and still going, nah, I'm not ready to get a tattoo.
No. The love that we have outweighs the price of a ring. So regardless of if you buy a ring, that's up to him. But I'm more than happy with him just having my initial on his finger the same.
Yeah, great. Oh, good on you.
I'm feeling so gushy. The crying baby in the background just made me feel my ovaries go again, you know?
Oh, are you going to settle up again?
No, I just mean it just in that moment. I was babies. We
you know what? We haven't been in the news for a while. Announce it now. We're trying for another baby.
Carrie Bickmore and Tommy Little.
Oh, I'm so excited. Tommy came in all cocky this afternoon. I'm going to go swim with the crocs tomorrow. Oh, and now you've looked up Crocosaurus Cove where you're going to be swimming and you're freaking out.
The cage of death. I didn't know it was going to be so scary. I should have known the name. But
you'll be right.
This thing's massive.
Yeah, but you're in a plastic box.
It's Perspex, mate. That could be glad wrap for all we know.
Well, it's not going to be.
That croc's huge.
Anyway, well, you go do that tomorrow morning. I'm going to go have a latte and I'll be thinking of you.
Yeah, fingers crossed you guys will be back. We'll catch you tomorrow. Hamish and Andy in next. Have a great afternoon. See ya.
The Carrie and Tommy catch-up is ready to podcast now on Radio App or iTunes.
Follow Carrie Bickmore and Tommy Little on Facebook, Twitter and Instagram at Carrie Tommy Show.